Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Podcast Extra Time. We're here in Henry Addington's. It's myself, Simon Head, with the man who was absent from the last show, Dan Ferdinand.
Work pays the rent.
There we go.
This doesn't.
Yeah, too right. If there's any sponsors out there, by the way, get in touch. We'd love some sponsorship. But, yeah, we're here to do a bit of extra time because there's a few issues have cropped up. Not least the sale of Liverpool Football Club, Dan.
I don't think it's a sale yet, although it has been agreed.
It's a strange one because the people selling the football club don't own the football club. It's a weird one, but before we go any further, have a listen to this. This is a protest video that's currently all over YouTube. It's being played all over the internet. Have a listen to this.
Listen to me now, Mr. Hicks, okay? I talk with you directly.
I'm a lifelong Liverpool fan and I hate what's happening to this club. I've
been going to the game since I was 7 years old.
The first match was against Luton Town, 1983.
I've supported the club for 45 years.
I have been a Liverpool fan all my life.
I've supported this club all my life.
I'm a Liverpool fan, have been all my life.
I pay my season ticket every season so I can go and watch the magic of my team.
I'm a fan from Germany.
I'm from Norway myself.
I'm from Yorkshire, but that doesn't matter. What matters to me is I love Liverpool Football Club.
We love Liverpool FC. Supported Liverpool for some nearly 50 years.
And what's happened to our wonderful club? Sold down the Swanee by two American businessmen.
If two utter buffoons had offered me the keys to Anfield, if a fellow shark had said to me, you know what, we can get these mugs to pay for it. If I was a businessman like you, I probably would have done it.
The worse this team plays, the less they are worth, and the more chance there is of you getting your fingers well and truly burned.
Done enough damage now.
You're not welcome.
You're actually messing people's lives up.
The problem is, I'm listening to people around Liverpool, and people that go to this are very proud Liverpool Football Club. And I don't know how to break this to you, but they don't like it.
They came with all these promises and reneged on them all.
You haven't done enough. You haven't done anything, actually.
Don't seem to have understood the history.
We're on a high, 2005, won the European Cup, fought the gone places. These two have come in, lied to us.
You are destroying a piece of history in Liverpool.
It's not just a football team, it's a family.
We know your history.
How long does stagnant water stay around, smelling until something fresh comes in?
We don't care about the traditions. No interest in sports fans anywhere across the world.
I wanted to say to Tom X, imagine if your family, which is what Liverpool Football Club is to most people, especially the real fans who go home and away, it's their family. It's like you're raping all of them at once over a long period of time and getting away with it.
Professionally, I'm a comedian, but I've never seen anything as funny as what you've created in this city.
It means more than anything that you can imagine.
It's not just the football team, it's the spirit that runs through our hearts.
You have violated our great football club.
For 3 years, you've basically ruined it.
We had the world-famous cop who sang as one voice. And that one voice now is pointed at you.
Pleading with you to just move out the city, move out the club.
You know, it's a club of disgrace. I've got no respect for you.
It's 3 years ago we were lied to. We were told there's going to be no debt on the club.
You guys promised us a spade in the ground.
We've been waiting long enough for new stadiums, new players.
Success! And all we've had is failure.
Turned our side from a trophy-winning side to a mid-table side.
Giving all Americans a bad name.
Your name's mud.
People like you have come along and stolen not only the club from us, but the game from us.
All over the world, that love Liverpool FC, you're not one of them.
Debt, the problems at the club, on the field, off the field, and it's all down to you.
This is not working. Give us it back.
You lied.
Promised us everything. It looked good when you came in, but you've broken all the promises.
No credibility, no integrity, no morals, and basically no money.
It's not worth whatever money you make.
The only way you'd ever understand it, how much we not feel about this club, is if someone came to your house and burnt it down.
We mean you no harm.
You have no soul. You've put the last nail in the coffin. Why are you doing it? Greed.
Debt is yours. Take it away with you.
You're nothing but a con man. Morally corrupt con man.
It's about money and about profit
and about greed.
Allows to have somebody else in who cares passionately about the club, about the fans, about our future.
What's happened in the last couple of seasons is just, it's hard to take.
You got no fans, you got no friends, you got no manners, you got no conscience.
You buy to the fans, you buy to the players.
Your lying, corrupt and deceitful ways are a blight on our club.
You've done it to your other sports franchises, you're not going to do it to us.
You're supposed to be the one with the money, I don't understand what's going on.
Show some respect.
You don't care about our history.
You don't realise what this club means. We won't stop until you're gone.
We need someone we can be proud of.
I want to remind you what you said. We believe that as custodians of this wonderful, storied club, we have a duty of care to the tradition and legacies of Liverpool. You still have a duty of care.
You don't want your legacy as a man to be known as somebody who ruins something and is hated.
Go.
Throw your hand in.
You must be on the verge of an heart attack.
Please, for the sake of everybody, walk away.
You're digging your heels in a place where no one wants you. It's embarrassing now.
I think you've overstayed your welcome as far as I'm concerned. So I think it's okay for you to walk away now.
Do just go, hands up. People will respect it in time.
And unless we get rid of Hicks and Gillette, Liverpool Football Club has no future.
So do the honourable thing and
please get out of our club.
I want you out now.
Sod off!
Walk on.
Get out of my club.
Get out of me.
Not welcome in this city.
Please let go.
Get out.
Just go. Shift.
As soon as.
It's time to clear off.
Get out of our club.
Tom Hicks, you must leave now.
I want Hicks to get out of our club.
Leave our club. Get out of our club.
You need to leave our city.
Go.
I want you out.
Please go.
Have the decency to get out now.
Just walk away.
Get out. Get out.
Walk away.
The sooner, the better.
It's about time those two got out of town.
You're tortured. You're too attered. Get out of our club.
Liverpudlians worldwide want our club back!
Sell it now, before it's too late.
Tom and George, jog on.
Just jog on.
Get off.
Do one.
Go, go.
We deserve better.
Cut and run.
Tom, off, you greedy, grasping.
Right, okay, so that's the protest video. They're opinionated. They're telling you what they think. There's various celebrities on there. If you go on the homepage of footballpodcast.co.uk, you can actually watch the video from there. And I thoroughly recommend you go to the Empire of the Cop website, which is where it emanated from in the first place. Check the video out. There's a lot of celebs on there. I think what they're saying is absolutely bang on. You know, the Hicks and Gillette have gone in there. They've made an awful lot of big promises, and they've delivered on precisely none of them, as far as I can make out. So,
I'm not totally against Hicks and Gillette. I think there's obviously always going to be a problem when two people partner to buy something so expensive. They both need to be put in the same way. These two guys have never done business before in such a large scale. But also, you can't fully legislate for this huge recession in American prime market, which all affected their personal assets and their businesses over there. What they actually have to be credited for is they actually, they did actually do okay. They didn't do terribly. The biggest problem for them, obviously, for me, is that the manager, Rafa Benitez, for pretty much the whole of their time, seemed to, in the end, really sparring a couple of signings, spend money on rubbish. He spent a lot of it.
He did do that, I'll give you that. What I would say is the issue now is that their position at the club has become pretty much untenable.
Yeah.
But even now they're trying to block this sale.
Well, before you say untenable, don't forget Newcastle Football Club. The year when they went down, I mean, the people in the North East were going to hang Ashley from St James's Park.
Yeah.
You know, he's taken them down, he's brought them back up again.
Yeah.
From a chairman's point of view.
He took a massive U-turn on his part in order for that to happen, though. He spent the best part of the season trying to offload the football club, couldn't, and decided that the only way that he would ever make it saleable was by actually trying to make it a good football club again. Now, I don't think that Hicks and Gillette have got that commitment, to be honest. As you say, they've
You know, this is one of the few times that they've actually been united in their opinion, that they, you know, they're not prepared to sell at the moment.
Yeah, but this is pretty much because the banks are going to take everything that they own. I think the biggest thing with the banks now is that, is it RBS? Pretty much
owns RBS.
Liverpool Football Club from the beginning of this month.
Yeah.
So they don't have a huge say in exactly where this goes. I think from a Liverpool point of view, I'm going to be honest, I think they've actually missed a trick here. I think a couple of clubs have missed it. You've got two clubs in Merseyside over up in the Liverpool area, two massive Premier League clubs with massive fan bases, but yet, why do they not build a stadium together? Share it. AC Milan do. AC Milan and Inter Milan.
Yeah.
Half blue, half red. The away fans sit in the opposite end.
Yeah.
The families sit there as well. I think they're missing a massive beat. They could build this stadium, get it, get this thing done and dealt with, and have a super stadium. 80,000, which will be full every week rather than once
every 2. I think as a fan who doesn't live in Liverpool, and obviously I'm the same as you, on paper it sounds like a really good idea, but I think if you put that to an Everton fan or you put that to a Liverpool fan, you'd probably get a different...
I'm an Arsenal fan. I would have shared with Spurs.
I think you're in a minority like that.
Listen, I am, but then how narrow-minded can you be?
No,
we're talking about the long-term survival of your club. 80,000 seats is miles better than 60, which you're going to be paying off for the next 50 years.
Yeah, I think in the situation that Liverpool have found themselves in, it looks as though they may well have found themselves a buyer in the
owners of the
Boston Red Sox. And the Boston Red Sox, if you were looking at an American sports, I hate the word franchise, but it is a sports franchise. And if you were to compare the American sports clubs or franchises with the English sports clubs, Boston Red Sox and Liverpool they're quite similar in some ways, in that they're both renowned for their support. They've got a real sort of tradition and history that's been carried through the years. There are lots of parallels between the two. And what the owners have done with the Boston Red Sox, apparently, and I've not genned up on it too much, from the little that I've read, the owners have actually been very good for the Red Sox. They had a long period of no success. These new owners have come in, they've invested, they've not gone mad, but they've gradually invested in talent, and it's come through over a period of time, and now the Boston Red Sox are back up there again as one of the leading lights in Major League Baseball.
Boston Red Sox had the unfortunate history of transferring, as we would call it, possibly the greatest ever baseball player, Babe Ruth,
yeah,
to the New York Yankees, and from pretty much that day they went almost 100 years, well, no, years and years, 80 years, I
Curse of the Bambino,
yeah, without winning the World Series,
yeah,
as they call it. And yeah, you're right, this company has come in and they've changed it around, they've made them into a good club. But you also talk about a company that deals in hedge funds and investment funds, which I believe last year didn't do too well. Now, as long as these projects are separate, and so, you know, if one collapses, especially those sort of hedge funds, then it doesn't affect the sporting side of things, then yeah, they could be really, they're obviously businessmen and good at that, so that, you know, that should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, they know, they seem to know what they're doing when it comes to dealing with sports clubs. They also looked after the Baltimore Orioles as well, and did a good job with them. So it'd be interesting to see how this progresses. From what I understand, the bid is of a figure around the £300 million mark.
Which is just about enough to pay off the debts.
Which basically covers Hicks and Gillette and covers the debts. But what it basically means, as far as I can make out, is that Hicks and Gillette will walk away pretty much with nothing.
No, massively down.
Well, in terms of, they're not going to get any profit out of this. But, you know, it's are they going to get anything better than that? From what I make out, there were two rival bids that came in, and they were competing with each other. And as a statement on the Liverpool website from their chairman, Martin Broughton, said, these two bids were competitive bids against each other, which suggested to him that the price that was being negotiated is a fair market price for the club. So, I mean, it's going to go through the courts. I reckon there might be quite a quick resolution on this. There's bound to be an appeal if it goes against Hicks and Gillette. So, all I hope, and as I say, I mean, I support a lower league football team. But
this £300 million blowing your mind?
Well, we're in trouble. We owe about £6 million.
Yeah,
so, you know, so if you look at... I'm a big fan of the history of Liverpool Football Club. I was brought up when Liverpool were doing really well. and you know they're those great European sides of the late 70s, early 80s. And I've always admired them as a football club, you know, the way they go about things. And you know, I don't want to see them struggling. I don't want to see any football club struggling. So for the sake of their fans and for the sake of the people of Liverpool, I hope that, you know, it all gets resolved soon. And you know, Liverpool back up there doing what they should be doing, which is challenging for trophies.
Yeah, let's probably just hope that they get some sensible owners in that are going to manage the club for for the future, because obviously the football club's going to last a lot, hopefully will last a lot longer than any individual owners or chairman. So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've had a shocking start to the season, in the relegation zone, but I do think they've got a good manager.
Yeah.
What they don't have is a strong squad of players.
They're probably only, what, about 8-10 points away from challenging for Champions League, so...
Yeah, it's early doors, yeah,
It's too early.
Yeah. All right, well, best of luck to them. As I say,
not too much luck, though.
Yeah, as an Arsenal
fan.
Check out Empire of the Cop, I think, if you want any in-depth sort of fan opinion. That seems to be the go-to site. And obviously, there's the official Liverpool website, liverpoolfc.tv, for all the official club statements. Right, moving on to...
another big club.
Another massive club, Real Madrid. They're our adopted Champions League team, and obviously they did not too bad in the Champions League first game round. They had a ridiculous number of shots against Ajax, and I think they won 2-0 in the end. They took on Auxerre from France in the second match, away from home. Going away from home to play a French side is always a tricky tie. French teams tend to be quite good at home. Real Madrid picked up a well-deserved 1-0 win thanks to Angel Di Maria's late goal. And with a quick report on that is our girl in Madrid, Kay Murray.
Hello podcasters, I know you guys were keen to know what the weather's like here in October in Madrid, and like England, the temperatures are even dropping here now in not so sunny Spain. But your Champions League podcast team Real Madrid aren't dropping anything when it comes to points. They had their first game on the road in Europe against Auxerre last week, and they managed to bring all 3 points back to the capital thanks to a solitary strike from Angel Di Maria. The winger came off the bench to score the late winner after Mesut Ozil picked him out in the area. He controlled the ball, fired it in with his left and made sure that it was a 1-0 finish for Real Madrid. Mourinho has come under some criticism in the last week due to the style of play, but he's getting the job done, and that's what's important at this stage of the tournament, just in the group stages. That 2 wins from 2, that's what the Portuguese coach wanted. And after AC Milan could only muster up a draw with Ajax, that means Real Madrid are now sitting top of Group G on 6 points. Next one, though, is the big one. It's AC Milan against Real Madrid, or should I say Real Madrid against AC Milan, at the Bernabeu, and I'll be back in 2 weeks' time to bring you much more on that one.
Right, that's what Kay had to say. We should be back after the next Champions League. In fact, she's promised us a preview of the next game, which is AC Milan. Don't get much bigger than that in the Champions League.
I definitely want to know what Kay thinks about it, because that's a massive European game. I mean, it doesn't really come much bigger than that.
No, and I think the way the fixtures work, it's a double header.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, yeah. That would be two great games to go to.
Cathedrals of football.
By the way, Kay. Yeah,
and I've been to the San Siro. I saw Inter win the Scudetto a couple of years ago, and it was exciting and terrifying all at the same time.
I suppose I'd have to look out for Ibrahimovic coming from Barcelona to go to AC Milan.
Yeah,
and also Ronaldinho.
Yeah, there's a bit of history there. So no,
and obviously Robinho's there, who played for Real Madrid. That's going to be a good game, isn't it?
There's tie-ins everywhere. There's tie-ins everywhere. It's going to be a fantastic match, and I think as long as it's not on the red button on Sky, I hope Sky don't put it on the red button because I can't get that on Virgin.
I can.
Long as it's on one of their Sky channels, it must be. Then I'll be watching that over any other Champions League game.
Thanks, mate.
That'll be good. Are Arsenal playing that day?
No.
Are they on different days? Yeah.
Thank God.
So that'll be the game I'll be watching. And let's say Kay hopefully will bring us a preview of that match. And obviously she'll come back after the game and give us a review of the match as well. Now we've had Liverpool, we've had Real Madrid. Now we'll talk about England.
Yeah, let's go down a couple of leagues, shall we?
Down a couple of notches. England have got the next round of their Euro Championship qualifiers coming up this Tuesday. We didn't put this in the podcast the other day. We were going to have it as our featured prediction game, but obviously there's the Alba Challenge Cup semi-final at Peterhead, which obviously took precedence over that, taking place at the weekend. But
you know, we can't.
We couldn't leave it a week without talking about England.
Go on, sorry. Peterhead, 2-1. That's my prediction.
Good lad. It's only me and you are actually going.
Let's go, Peterhead.
Anyway, we need this.
Back to low league football.
Low league football and England. Yeah, so it's England versus Montenegro. I might have said Macedonia earlier. Montenegro at Wembley. What are your thoughts on this? We've got all sorts of injury issues, and Fabio Capello asked Emil Heskey to come back. Emil Heskey said no.
I think a lot of people keep saying it. It's been a PR disaster after disaster after disaster. I don't think it is. I think what people sometimes forget is most games we watch as fans, and we generally watch them once. These guys get paid a lot of money to analyse the games in depth, break them down. They have a team of people that can do it. A lot of people are so fixated on what people do for England in the sense of how many goals they score or how many times they set someone up. But sometimes as a manager, I would say you have to look at what a person does for the team and does he allow other players to play. And if that's the case, they're doing just as important a job as your star players. And that's what Emil Heskey did, in my opinion. Mm. He allowed other players to play. He almost always occupied both centre-backs.
He certainly got the best out of Michael Owen when he was
And he pretty much did the same for Wayne Rooney during the qualifiers. All right, Wayne had a bad World Cup. Well, supposedly he had a bad World Cup, but who didn't?
Yeah.
Including some other players from other countries.
Every Premier League player had a Duff World Cup. Exactly. I can't think of a single one who shone.
And even Cristiano Ronaldo had a bad one. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't see the problem in asking him to come back. I do see a problem in then calling up Kevin Davis.
Is he not a similar type of player? My issue with Kevin Davis, I think he's been deserving of a call up over a period of time, because if you look at Emil Heskey's role, he basically does the same thing.
We've attached more violence.
Well, that was my next point. How are European referees going to deal with Kevin Davis's? I wouldn't call him a dirty player. He's robust.
His physical style.
He puts himself about. I mean, it's a bit of a dying art in the English game. Mark Hughes was the best at it. He was. I hesitate to say the word dirty, but he was hard as nails.
How many World Cups did he go to?
But he played for Wales, so he didn't play in any.
Right. Yeah,
but he was brilliant. He was great for United in Europe. You know, he always used to pop up with useful goals for United in the domestic competitions. And Kevin Davis is a similar type of player in terms of his style of play. Very good with his back to goal, holds the ball up well, causes defenders trouble. Is he going to play?
No.
Because we're going to need someone to spearhead that forward line. So who's going to play up front for England?
Darren Bent.
You think Bent and Rooney will play up front?
Goal scorer. I mean, I don't particularly dislike Kevin Davis, but I feel at 33 years old, I don't want to be ageist, but really, how much is he going to, oh yeah, but you're not going to play for England.
Oh, cheers for that.
Although, on this rate, you still have a chance, if you're a robust forward. But, the problem is, how much is he really going to offer England in the long term? Is it not better to bring in have a young player in the squad? Have a player that you think can do a bit of a job? As I say...
Are you leaning towards Andy Carroll at this point?
Well, Andy Carroll has his own issues, some of them off-field. This ankle injury, I'm not sure whether he would get through the game. But, again... I just think you've got to look around the league. Obviously, there is a big problem because Emil retired. Bobby Zamora, who looked like the immediate replacement, had his...
He'd have been a shoe-in, wouldn't
sorry,
he?
Broke his leg.
Yeah.
And so, who is really... If you're looking around the league for that type of player, who is left? But listen, good luck to him. I think everyone's team will change if he scores a winner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think...
If it's a 1-0 victory and he scores in the 90th minute with a header...
I think when you're dealing with a qualification match, the result is all important. I think if you can bring young players through at the same time, then great. But I think there are times where you just have to put on the players you need to get the result. And if Davis is the man to do that, then so be it.
Will he play? That's the question.
I agree with you. I would play Darren Bent. Darren Bent has deserved to play for a long time.
Yeah.
And he scored in his last appearance. Again, fully deserved. And hopefully he's earned himself a start. I mean, with all the injuries we've got, he's the next best player in the line. Get him in the side, I think. He's got to play. What do we think about the game as a whole? I mean, Montenegro will be don't be a tricky, you know, a tricky proposition.
I think originally a few years ago there was Serbia and Montenegro.
But it were Yugoslavia and Croatia and Serbia and Montenegro. Yeah.
So their biggest problem is, have they got enough players left? It's scoring goals. So are they going to be able to score against us? Having said that, though, I suppose England's other big question, I think, well, you're talking about two centre-backs coming in, John Terry and Rio Ferdinand. My personal belief is Phil Jagielka should never lose his position, lose his place. He's played way too well for that. He's looked solid in the England squad. And so one of them's going to have to miss out.
Yeah.
Terry looks like he might be carrying a rib injury.
I think Jagielka is in the same sort of mould as Terry.
Yeah, so
in terms of the style of play. So I think if Rio is fit enough to come in, then bring Rio in. But I think it's Jagielka or Terry for me. And I would go with Jagielka.
I know. I mean, for me, Jagielka, in that position, is a first player on the team sheet.
He's younger. I think he's
probably a little bit quicker as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Terry is, you know, arguably he's tucked himself out of the squad in some respects, you know, with all his...
With his rib injury talk, couldn't
he? Well, no, I mean, you know, there was all the stuff before the World Cup, obviously. Then there was his attempted sort of coup in the middle of the World Cup, where he was like, yeah, we're going to tell the manager what we think. And then the rest of the team were like, sort of staring at the ceiling. No, no, you're on your own, son. He's left himself out to dry a little bit. If he's on the top of his game, then John Terry should be in the team, because he's a good centre-back. But I think he proved in the World Cup that he wasn't firing on all cylinders. I think he does rely on someone covering him.
Yeah,
Matt Upson wasn't that player. All of a sudden his protection was gone. He looked an average defender in the World Cup. I would play Jagielka. I think he'll take a bit more responsibility. He's a bit more mobile, as you say. I think he's a better option.
Yeah,
Rio, I think this is a good game for Rio to come back in.
At home.
I don't think the toughest. No, I think you know, it'll be another game towards full fitness. I think, you know, he'll have a younger, fitter player alongside him. But I think having Rio back in there, the other big question is, do you give him the captain's armband back? I say probably not. I'll let Gerrard have it. He's done a great job.
My personal opinion was Gerrard should have got it in the first place. So there you go. I don't need to say more than that.
No, I totally agree with you. I think Gerrard is a more natural England captain. And he seems to have really taken on the responsibility, and he seems to have lifted his game as well.
Yeah, I think that's why...
He's in a Brian Robson mould.
There's certain players that you give the captaincy, not because they're the loudest in the dressing room, not because they're really natural leaders off the field, but on the field, even though they're a good player, it takes them to the next level. There's some players that you give them it to calm them down. Patrick Vieira got it for Arsenal to calm him down and to keep him at the club. But Gerrard's certainly one of those players that you give him the captaincy, and he, I don't know what it is, but he feels that responsibility, but it doesn't put too much, it doesn't overawe him.
It doesn't burden him.
No,
it?
Not at all.
He seems to lift him, yeah.
Shown at Liverpool time and time again, he wants to be the man that everyone looks to. He wants to be the man that drags them kicking and screaming to glory. And so far, he literally has done that for England since he's taken the armband.
Yeah, no, he's done well.
Rio has been very deserving of the captaincy, but at the end of the day, this fitness is a major issue. I think if he plays for a full year, maybe.
England v Montenegro, give us a score prediction and then we'll finish off with these.
I said I would concede last time, didn't I? So I'm rubbish.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for clean sheet.
Yeah.
2-0. I wanted to say 3, but I'm going to go safe with 2.
Right, well, I'm going to say 3 because England at Wembley, even when they can have an average half and still win 3-0.
Oh, no, yeah,
there's something about them playing at Wembley where they just seem to turn it on. And you watch England play at Wembley, it's really weird because other opposition side turn up. England, you sort of look at them and you think, well, they're not flying, but they managed to get the goals. I don't understand it. It's almost like we've got this aura 12th over us.
Man.
Yeah, I don't, I 12th mean,
man.
Well, I mean, England fans are fantastic all the time anyway, so...
It's a big old stadium as well.
Yeah.
It's big old pressure.
But, I'm going to go for a 3-0 win.
Yeah.
Right, before we finish off on this football podcast extra time edition... We need to alert you to our Twitter account. We've got obviously there's our regular one, which is found at twitter.com/footballpodcast. Follow that for all the usual bits and bobs, and have a bit of banter with us during the week. I'm normally on there most of the day. I can sort of spot your tweets and reply. We do have another one, which we created. As you know, Dan, who's sitting opposite me now, has picked up a nickname of Backstick Dan. Now, Dan, you need to explain this, first of all.
Basically, it starts from when I was younger. When you learn about the game, my uncle always said he was a striker, that, you know, if he pulls to the back post, that's where he gets his goals. That's some goals paid a rent. So I always remembered that, and I always say, fly it to the back post. If there's a free kick on the on the left hand side, get a right foot, swing it in, back stick. Because if everyone misses it, generally the keeper misses it, it goes in.
Yeah.
If someone gets a nut on it, great. So I love it. I watch it. I call it all the time. I watch it all the time.
Whenever we're watching the games, like back stick. Even when we were at Old Trafford, we were watching the games like cross coming with back stick.
Yeah.
So that's why you're known as Backstick Dan on the
podcast. So now they won't leave me alone.
Right, so but what we've done initially is a bit of a piss take, but this is actually, it's taken on a life of its own. You now have another Twitter account. You've got your own one, at Dan Ferdinand, by the way. You can follow Dan, at Dan Ferdinand. You can follow me, at Simon Head. But we do have a special podcast account for Dan, which is at Backstick Dan, all one word. And tell us about this account. Tell us what it does, because it has one basic purpose.
Yeah, listen. There's going to be no banter. There's going to be no stories. No funny tweets. This is all about goals. Goals from the back stick. So I want you to send me your ones. If you're at a park game and you film it on your phone, if you find it on YouTube, any of ones in history, your favourite ones, any goals like that. I'm trying to think of a really famous one. Would that Pele one? Well, no, he didn't score it, I suppose, but that would be an example. The Pele header.
There.
He was at the back post, but he stuck it wide. So it's all, everything like that. Send it over, and then we'll have a jolly good. I say, well, there'll be no banter. We'll have a banter about the backstick goals or misses.
Yeah, and the best thing to do, obviously, put at Backstick Dan on these tweets, but also put a hashtag on them as well, because we'll follow the hashtag. And the hashtag is nice and simple. It's #backstick, we'll follow all of those. And what we'll do on the podcast each week, we'll have a little segment where Dan will read out his favourite backstick goal tweets from that week.
Yeah.
As an example, Gillingham played at Crinton Stanley at the weekend.
Ooh.
We shared 11 goals in that game. Unfortunately, Gillingham only scored 4 of them. I understand that Gillingham's 4 goals, none of them were scored at the backstick. One of them was a near post header that went in at the back stick, but that doesn't count.
No.
It's got to be put in at the back stick. It's not where the ball finishes, it's where the
ball starts.
That's it. Very, very key point. And but apparently Accrington scored 2 goals at the back stick.
All right.
So our ones are excellent considering we let 7 in, but you know. But yeah, that's
you
what
you say. Potato,
about.
I say potato.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So backstick goals. Tweet Dan at Backstick Dan. Put your hashtag Backstick. I think that pretty much rounds us up for the extra time edition of the football podcast. If you're going to a game, if you're watching a game, if you're listening to a game on the radio, send us tweets during the week. Feel free and send us messages as well. If you want to send us an email, we're at banter@footballpodcast.co.uk.
Is email getting really old? It's like an old person thing.
Very few people use email these days, I think, other than for work. So
social network.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you can tweet us at twitter.com/footballpodcast. And obviously for all your backstick needs, it's Backstick Dan. That's us done for this week. We'll be back with a full football podcast show on Tuesday next week.